Foreign Madam and the White Yogi, a verse novel in progress by Chris Mooney Singh, Chapter 26. In this installment, we're in the village with Margot in her schoolhouse and the children with the monsoon pouring down. Suddenly, she was stranded on an island. Rain-soaked kids and teachers were crammed in a schoolhouse with no window glass, at war with thunderbolt, bull-roarer wind, monsoon. She knew her kiddies wanted mud pig time, to be let off the teacher leash to taste first rain. It filled the schoolyard like a moat. Gold veins of lightning cracked the firmament to underline her firm, not yet. Oh, madam, please, please. But she sat them down in rows as bold lightning lit up windows like an old photographer might discharge his trays of flash magnesium and magic puffs of light. Tell us a story. Tell us a story, please, chorused the children, bent on having fun. Perhaps a tale might unsettle restlessness. In her pig Hindi, Kumara could translate. The poison pond waited on her bookshelf. Quite apt, she thought, while sitting in this moat. Give me a moment, she excused herself, and came back with her quarter Mahabharat, the illustrated version brought from Delhi, mostly for kids, no doggy tail, no cat, the epic in brief, so much better than on telly at Barhai's place that day of mortal combat. Thus she began. Day was stinking hot. Sahadeva, youngest Pandava, was sent to find cool water in the jungle. He saw a crystal pool and bent to sip, but a white crane croaked. Answer all my questions before you drink. The pond is mine, and it will do my bidding. Arrogantly, he drank. She flopped her head down dead. Kumara waited. Then she blinked. With Sahadeva gone, they sent off Nakula, who found his twin sprawled out dead beside the pond. The crane spoke up. Nakula sneered, huh? Then drank. Then Margot clutched her throat and died with style. Soon, Madam blinked awake from story sleep. Arjuna, then big Bhima, drank and died. Who really listens? Yogi came to mind. She fought back tears. At last Yudhisthira then saw his lifeless siblings by the pool. Answer me before you drink. The pond is mine and it will do my bidding, spoke forth the crane. Yudhisthira paused. What would you do? She probed her audience. They didn't know. Okay. Ask me then, Yudhisthira said. 100 questions later, the crane was pleased. I'll grant one life, just one. Impossible choice. Such agony it was, forced to choose between his lovely brothers. Brother Nakula. The children gulped. So why him? The white crane asked. At least one son of Madri's lives today, one from another mother. I was born of Kunti. In this way, both survived through us. Yes, family is number one. They understood. Then Atul broke the silence. So what happened, madam? She saw how well that she had pulled them in. Her puppet-headed acting had jollied up the tale of dying siblings. Well, the crane brought them all to life. They sighed, relieved. Margot straightened shoulders, cleared her throat, and pretended to be the crane of the poison pond. Stepping from his chariot of thunder, a god appeared, she boomed rhetorically. I am Yama, god of death, your real father. This was a test, Yudhisthira. You've passed with flying colours. You see? All with detachment. As you protect the way of righteous Dharma, I will protect your lineage. Then he vanished, leaving them to rub astounded eyes. and hugged their elder brother with deep love. She bowed before the kids, who clapped and cheered. Eyes that had changed from fierce anemones to sad red poppies were back to normal brown, and the monsoon wind and lightning had died down. It was time for them to run. They fled the school, sloshing about the moat of mud and dung, quickly letting go their highly strung, cooped-up energy in the poison pool. It wasn't time, but she said, "Go on, go." Kumara first, then Rajinder and Prakriti, who ankle-waded through the monsoon sea, spraying and splashing as lovers, quid pro quo. She slumped down in her office, some time out. The loss of Yogi and the storm cloud shift and telling the water tale had set her adrift in depression beyond all reasonable doubt. Atul waited outside, her Eagle Scout. The wet had come to stay. Now school was out and Yogi was gone to the other side of mud. A face of grief was upheld by two hands, and anger was her runaway desire. Two cheating husbands had defected. Two slapped-down lessons were enough per life. No more dumbbell couch potato sport with beery smoke mouths, soggy TV brains who knock girls up then hit the pub, and cursed conquistadors of shoebox cash, replacing her stashed savings with blank cut paper wads. What lacuna of the eye had blinded her? The Yogi Project had been her final hope. Now, different kind of water, her inland sea of salt, dropped upon the table, the couldn't care less of loss, her fortress of stress and island of freakout, still wanted him back, or Ophelia underwater. An absurd expectation to drown in ankle sludge, stay in dung-watered dungeon, playgrounds of boneyards, smell the buffalo effluent, bodies are shit factories, windows have no glass, you are as transparent. Braveheart, you're a coward, hoping for a helpline. Heaven or hell water pour equally from eyes. Is this bucolic idyll just paying off old karmas? Take nothing for granted, husbands. A compost. Better to be the one to do the kill than be the patsy detail culled. Sending him off had stopped Ophelia's poor me brain from drinking marshes. Better to be the Draupadi who had five husbands at her royal rites to push blokes off like cuckoos from her thighs. Only trouble makes you stronger. Stripped of queendom and a jeweled throne, the fashion statement Zari saris with gold and silver weft through peacock blue. Stay strong as Draupadi's tough love, yet free to make a jungle bed and lie in it alone if one has to. So she had waved him from her falcon wrist, a calculated risk she had to take. A raptor might otherwise fight for air, and later, blame would turn to beaks and claws. Perhaps he would fly back, yet the plan was flawed. Still needing surety that a trainable bird, peregrine blue, her prince with finer hopes, might wear the falcon hood to keep him blind. No, intelligence must have its wild wings, she knew deep down. Release had hurt, though. Her loud machine of feeble tears began, and the long monsoon broke down, howling with loss across the dusty desk. Little Atul was waiting just over the water. Her little man, the dark-skinned, castless boy, whiplash quick, smarter than all the lumps of farmer lads and daughters, buffalo thick. Her gambling lamb spoke up when she appeared.
"Madam, madam, careful of the water, very soggy gober mud with potholes."
He was her lookout and reward for kindness, who gave more back by learning all he could, dwarfing bullies. She was his Mother Partridge. Mugger was glad. Some little men are true and wise despite short legs and know of troubles. If only Paul and Adele could be like him. Proudly he steered his madam villagewards. They sloshed and slipped and laughed as last drops glopped upon their heads. Now close to madam's hut, Atul whispered,
"We are being followed."
A yellow, lolloping puppy was behind them. They stopped. It paddled and panted closer through clear puddles where bits of sun now shimmered before the next storm shower. The puppy barked and nosed a fallen stick from water, tossing and catching and dropping it at her feet.
"He likes you, madam," Atul, the sage kid, said.
"But whose is he?" she asked, his English now improving day by day.
"No one's, madam. Such cooters live on rotten scrap and bone. Madam, he likes you. Take the cooter home. Otherwise he soon will be biting and fighting."
It was as if the boy had voiced his own true wish to live with her. His own mother bashed him nightly with no husband present. He'd gone to labour somewhere in Punjab, meaningly for those who sleep through seasons.
"If I do, you'll have to help," she said. "He came along behind us both today and wants a proper master as well as a madam."
He giggled then, charmed by her witticism.
"He needs a name," she said. "You choose." "Yudi?"
"Is that an Indian doggy kind of name?"
"Neji, madam. No one keeps such a pet. Everyone thinks that a dog is worse than the dirt."
"Ah, Yudhishthira, the Mahabharata." At last she got it. "You remembered from the story."
His bright teeth gleamed, happy with himself.
"Yudhi it is," she nodded. "Well, you better go. Madam G, I will be helping you both later."
And her little man strode tall on past the last thatch hut. Beyond, the caste pariahs lived as shit can cleaners near the roaming dogs. The little mutt called Yudi followed through her gate, around the side to the pump where she grabbed and held him down, then worked the water lever. He bit the gushing stream and growled and bit again at the clean, cold aquifer as she pumped and caught his neck, lathering with soap to lose the mongrel crust and make of him a prince, a shining yellow god trimmed and groomed and fed. Was he a proxy dog, four-legged life in need? Today, she did not care for getting her woman woe. One puppy was enough to salve her aching love. And perhaps he was not able to get home. The storms, the roads, the lack of telephone. And perhaps he was not able to get home to make report as wet days change things fast. The rhythm of the season bogged life down. And perhaps he was not able to get home. Thus came Atul. She gave him English lessons. The little man would bring her buffalo milk while Yudi yapped and did his doggy dirt. And perhaps he was not able to get home, so the yellow mutt had moved in under the bed. And perhaps he couldn't make it back just yet. She blamed the laden skies, the floodplain soak. She lit Nag Champa, praying, "Please come soon." Leaving must make its figure eight for home.
You've been listening to Chris Mooney Sings Foreign Madam and a White Yogi. Tune in next week for another installment. You can also check out my website at chrismooneysing.com or check the program notes.